Merci à vous. Puis
vous me les donnez
continuez.
Pas, hein, ces livres-là.
Je suis désolée. Continuez votre beau travail.
Non, je vais aller vous voir maintenant et je vais aller me documenter encore concernant les, surtout les dessous de la politique de l'Oncle Sam. Merci, Julie.
OK, puis merci Max. Beaucoup. Merci beaucoup, Sophie.
Merci, Max.
Salut. Écoute, là, on a une surprise pour vous pour quelques minutes. Nous sommes accompagnés de Chloé et de Julien du collectif des Lucioles qui vont nous faire un petit topo. Ils vont se, avoir une petite conversation de 5 minutes, là. OK, parler du vidéo engagé.
Oui, allô?
Allô, Julien. Allô, Chloé. Le micro est à vous.
OK. Enchanté, vous qui nous écoutez. Moi, c'est Julien.
Moi, c'est Chloé. Salut tout le monde.
OK. En fait, moi, je vais être l'intervieweur, puis je vais interviewer Chloé. Chloé, peut-être que parmi les gens qui nous écoutent, il y en a qui ne connaissent pas les Lucioles. Est-ce que tu peux trouver quelques mots-clés qui représentent bien les Lucioles?
Bien, je dirais tout d'abord que les Lucioles, c'est un collectif de vidéastes engagés.
Âgé environ de quel âge?
De 7 à 77 ans.
Très bien.
Ça fait combien de temps?
En fait, il n'y a pas de limite d'âge.
Ça fait combien de temps que ça dure, les Lucioles?
Bien, on va fêter notre deuxième anniversaire bientôt, mais ça compte la grossesse là-dedans, parce que la première projection a eu lieu en septembre 2002.
Maintenant, juste savoir, nous sommes bien dans un salon de livres anarchistes. Quel est le rapport avec les vidéastes ici, là?
Ben, moi, je dirais que c'est un salon des ressources anarchistes, plutôt, là,
ouais.
Que juste le livre anarchiste, parce que tu peux trouver ici beaucoup de CD,
ouais,
mais donc aussi des VHS. Je pense que c'est vraiment un salon des ressources anarchistes. Mais je pense pas que les Lucioles s'affichent précisément comme anarchistes, mais on...
Engagés, plutôt, hein?
Ouais, c'est ça.
C'est ça, puis on n'a pas une ligne directrice fixe, donc nous, on veut être ouverts, puis on va parler de plein de sujets, autant de l'anarchie qu'on peut parler du vote proportionnel ou
ouais.
Ça, c'est très varié. Le but, c'est justement de nous ouvrir à des nouvelles alternatives.
Maintenant, justement, juste savoir quel est l'avantage du vidéo, des images que vous présentez à vos présentations. Envers le mouvement peu importe le mouvement militant, là, quel est l'avantage?
Ben, on dit une image vaut mille mots. Tu sais, c'est comme des fois, les gens vont avoir de la misère à croire des choses tant qu'ils ne voient pas les images. Donc, des fois, ça, des vidéos vont avoir plus un impact que si on raconte des choses aussi ou un article. Comme par exemple, on a un film sur la crise du logement, Un toit, c'est un luxe. Où on suit un groupe militant, Claque Logement, qui rentre dans les bureaux. Il y en a deux films. Il y en a un qui rentre au bureau du conseil municipal, puis il y en a un qui c'est pendant l'assemblée. Puis on voit à quel point il n'y a pas de démocratie.
La question.
Mais la question, c'est comment la vidéo peut convaincre. Mais c'est ça, je pense que de voir des images comme
c'est
un exemple pour.
Ouais. OK. Et puis vous avez une projection début dans un mois à peu près.
C'est le 9 juin.
OK.
Puis en fait, ça va être la dernière projection de l'année.
OK.
Puis on a accumulé beaucoup de films, ça va être une grosse soirée, au même qu'on on pensait faire une nuit blanche.
OK.
De projection de films, mais en invitant des artistes pour mettre un peu de temps entre les vidéos.
OK.
Mais ça, c'est juste avant de lancer la grande caravane. Parce qu'on cet été, on va être en caravane sur les routes du Québec.
OK, c'est quoi ça, justement?
C'est la caravane des Lucioles. C'est comme une troupe de vidéastes qui va se promener sur les routes. Les nomades, c'est ça. Qui va se promener sur les routes, puis qui va aller dans les festivals. On va aller au festival du papier, on va aller au festival de la giblotte, puis on va aller montrer les films, nos films, à des gens qui sont pas nécessairement le public habituel. Donc, on va essayer de semer des graines... de révolte.
C'est ça, sortir de Montréal, parce qu'il y a beaucoup de gens qui nous connaissent à Montréal, mais en région, il y a moins de gens, puis il se passe beaucoup de choses aussi.
Ben ouais. Justement, pour terminer, j'ai vu, parce qu'il faut, il y a le prochain book review, pour ainsi dire, qui commence, mais j'ai remarqué que le collectif des Lucioles, il y a des présentations aussi à Joliette. Hein? Alors, ça commence bien, là.
Ouais.
Écoutez, puis on a un site web qui s'en vient aussi. Ben pour l'instant, on en a un très très temporaire là, mais il y en a un qui s'en vient qui va être vraiment complet.
Où dans dans combien de temps il va être en ligne, Chloé?
Ben d'ici les premiers jours, les prochains jours, c'est un scoop que je vous donne à vous tous, chers auditeurs.
Mais ça brette, je trouve, Chloé. Il me semble que ça fait une couple de semaines que tu me
dis. Écoutez, vous allez vous chamailler dehors là, justement. Donc, merci beaucoup Chloé, merci beaucoup Julien. Je dois terminer ce bref entretien. Et puis, c'est ça, on va passer à la demi-heure anglaise maintenant avec, est-ce que c'est Neil ou Brett? Hey. Brett, so, have a seat, you know.
Welcome to CKUT. We are broadcasting live from the 5th Annual Anarchist Book Fair, and we are going to be having a bit of a discussion with a number of distributors and publishers who are working with some of the literature that's being distributed at the Anarchist Book Fair today. So we're going to begin with two people who have been tabling today. If you just want to introduce yourselves.
My name's Eileen Young, and I'm here with Fernwood Books, Between the Lines, and Arbiter Ring.
Hey, I'm Louis Restelli. I'm here for Fish Piss Magazine, as well as a Distrobito cigarette machine project in Montreal.
Great, welcome. Maybe we can begin by just talking about the different kinds of literature that we see on the tables today. Talk about some of the literature that you yourselves are publishing and distributing. So, Aline, you can start.
Okay. We're more of an academic publisher. Certainly Fernwood is. The Arbiter Ring titles that I have are more anarchist in their focus. But they're all, you know, critical looks at, you know, the situation in the society and, you know, what can be done to improve things, both from an ecological point of view, a political point of view, etc.
And Louis?
Well, Fish Piss has been around since around 1996, and it's kind of a collective magazine that groups together all kinds of different writing and art, mostly of a social or political bent, as well as some more fun stuff. The idea is that to give a platform for as many different contributors as possible and different art forms talking about a variety of subjects and with an accent on the do-it-yourself, DIY, and, of course, a critical look at the social currents and political currents of the day.
So it sounds like both of you are distributing work that is socially and politically engaged, but also is a little bit diverse. Maybe we can talk about spaces like this and their importance in terms of being forums, being spaces within which literature and art and political writing that doesn't make it to the shelves of, you know, big name bookstores can actually have a place and can be seen and bought and read by the public. So, Eileen, can you talk about why it's important for you and the works that you're distributing today to be at the Anarchist Book Fair?
Well, I think it's just fantastic, you know, because there's so many people, as you say, people who aren't necessarily going to show up to a large store, and the large stores aren't necessarily going to stock our books, or if they do, they're going to spine them and they're not going to be obvious and so on. So it's a great forum for exchange of ideas, and it gives you a real sense of solidarity with people, like-minded people. You know, and the fact that it does include the art aspect and the music, and it's just so, diverse, I guess is the word, but it's really quite enriching, and it's a fantastic venue.
Yeah, I would add to that saying that aside from the politically based works, videos and writing and books that are purely political, we see a lot of stuff that isn't, but that is political in the way it was produced. There's a lot of do-it-yourself stuff. There's a lot of people who, for the first time, are selling directly to the public and getting some feedback I've had numerous folks come up and ask about contributors in the magazine, and you know, it's a chance to meet people face to face, do some networking, and even for say the I noticed some tables of poetry and some tables of more graphic work that's not necessarily political in content, but I think just the fact that there's a space for everybody to bring things together that's independently produced is obviously great use for all of us here.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think we're going to be talking to distributors about the actual content of some of their books and their the literature they've got here and the politics between the pages. But it is also necessary that we talk about the politics around the very act of distribution, the act of being published. We have someone here, if someone's would be kind enough to relinquish their microphone. We have someone here from the Bookmobile, which she will be speaking to. So welcome, Emily.
Thank you, Rhett.
Emily, can you just tell us a little bit about what the Bookmobile is? Because I think there's a lot of people that don't really know about it.
The Bookmobile is a traveling collection of independently produced bookworks. So these are zines, comic books, art books, and we have a small jury of activists and artists who sort of sift through the collection and choose works to go on tour. And then we tour all around North America. This year, a more localized tour around Pennsylvania, New York, Quebec, and Ontario. And we go to all sorts of venues, community centers, arts collectives, galleries, and we present the contents of the Bookmobile, and often host small workshops as well on independent media production.
So, Emily, would you say that the Bookmobile is an artistic project or a political project, or would you deny that there's a distinction?
I wouldn't deny there's a distinction, but I would definitely argue for the fact that it is both inherently artistic and political in nature, in content and in the very act of encouraging people to produce their own media and distribute it widely often to audiences who might not have access to the tools of media production or even be aware that they do have access to these tools.
Would you say that getting one's work published and getting more marginal works or more radical artistic and political works is getting increasingly more difficult today? Do you feel like there's in terms of like the submissions to the Bookmobile, do you feel like there's people see it as a really fantastic and needed opportunity to distribute and have their stuff read?
I mean, I know people definitely see it as an amazing opportunity to get their work out there. But more and more we're meeting people who, you know, have produced their own zines for years, who, you know, are part of sort of locally run media centers and are quite familiar with the act of self-publishing.
Thanks
so
much.
Which is really exciting.
And thanks. Emily, when is the Bookmobile going to be in Montreal?
The Bookmobile is coming back to Montreal twice in the next few months. June 1st to 4th will be here, and again September 1st to 6th.
Okay. And Eileen, before you go, I wanted to ask you if you could name some of the titles that you have brought with you here today and maybe talk about whether or not some have been more popular than others, if you have any particular favorites that you would like to talk about.
Well, there's a book called An Action a Day, which is a compilation of all kinds of radical actions that a person can do, direct actions. That looks very interesting. I haven't read that. There's a book called Another World is Possible by David McNally, which is a fantastic look at the history of anti-capitalist struggles, starting with the enclosures in England. There's a really great book called Juggernaut Politics by Jacques Gélinas, which is a look at the whole situation with globalization. Spells out globalization to me in the most amazingly frank and direct way, and has a lot of good suggestions at the end for the kind of struggle. So those are a few of the ones that sort of come to my mind. But they're all really quite interesting books, and it's the reason I like working for them, because I get to read all these books.
For those people who are just tuning in, this is CKUT, and we're broadcasting today live from the Anarchist Book Fair, the fifth Anarchist Book Fair in Montreal. We are just going to transition a little bit. I'm going to pass off the mic to my co-host, Neil. But we are speaking with distributors and publishers and writers about the importance of forums and events like the Anarchist Book Fair for the distribution of and publication of works that might otherwise have a hard time being having a space through which people can access them and read their content. So I'll just pass it off to Neil.
Hey, thanks so much, Brett. Okay, so just to recap, maybe we can reintroduce who we've got with us today. I believe we have from out east.
Well, the Fernwood Publishing is based in Halifax, but I'm based here. I'm the local representative.
Mm-hmm.
My name's Eileen Young.
Okay.
But I'm also representing two other publishers, Arbiter Ring, which is in Winnipeg, and Between the Lines, which is in Toronto.
Okay. And joining us also is Louis from...
Fish Piss Magazine.
Okay.
Also run a little distribution network in Montreal called Distrobito, which is old cigarette machines that now sell little books and CDs and things.
Okay. And we're also going to be joined right here by Puck. Puck, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your... you can move in. A little bit about what you do in terms of editing and publishing.
I was an editor on an editorial collective for the Earth First Journal out of Tucson, Arizona, and now I'm an independent publisher and a freelance writer in Philadelphia.
All right, super. So, so maybe we could actually just start out with an open question, and I'd just like to ask all of you, if you can, tell me a little bit about how you decide what kind of work is going to be included in the publications you publish. What kind of things do you think about when you're receiving manuscripts dealing with anarchist writings?
My passions are ecology and race, and so I try to find where that connects the most when I write.
Okay. Louis?
Well, in Fish Piss Magazine, it's a very varied magazine, but what's happened over the years is by keeping a real variety of stuff, generally with a social cultural bent to things, it's really all over the place for content, and that tends to attract a lot of interesting... It's kind of a place for people to send stuff that doesn't quite fit in or slot in, not necessarily theme-related or whatnot. And given that it's over 120 pages and rather fine print with a lot of stuff, if anything, obviously there's no question of putting anything in that's either racist or that would be just as well at home in something mainstream, because it's really a home for things that you're not going to see elsewhere. For example, the free weeklies, which are mainly entertainment content. I wouldn't be putting anything about a current movie or anything like that, but if it's a critique on, the commercialization of independent film or something like that, well, again, it's wide open, but with an accent on what you wouldn't normally see elsewhere.
And could you give us a few examples of things, people who might not already know something about Fish Piss, what they could expect when they, first open up a copy, what sorts of things which they wouldn't normally find in, say, mainstream bookstores, mainstream books?
Well, for example, in the last issue, we had numerous articles about the record industry, but by both people who run record labels, another one by a person who ran a studio, and another one by one of the members of this Montreal band Godspeed, which has inadvertently become rather world famous. The theme is something that's much talked about as far as MP3s and the record industry or whatnot, but what we pulled together for that issue was just a bunch of different perspectives on the issue from points of view that you wouldn't normally expect. Previous issues have dealt with U.S. foreign policy. There was a big issue on the Quebec summit, and a forthcoming issue is starting to come together. Numerous people are writing about elections from different points of view, general fashion, and more specific about municipal or elections in general, how to make them more representative. So there are themes that tend to coagulate around each issue. But there's also a real variety, though. There's always room for other things, anything from history of social housing to even something a little more personal, like somebody's experience train hopping for the first time.
We've been talking a little bit here at the Anarchist Book Fair about editing some of these anarchist texts. So I'd like to ask the people here collected today on the panel, when it comes down to making decisions, we've been sort of been speaking about decisions as being made by, you know, maybe one person, one editor. What are some of the other ways as editors, what are some of the tactics and techniques you've come across in the past few years through your experience, which relate to editing the material, you know, figuring out what's in, what's out, what sort of community, sort of collective ways have you thought about making these decisions?
I think editing is can be a real challenge, especially if you're trying to do it within a directly democratic consensus fashion, like we did at the Earth First Journal, for instance. There's always the tendency to strive for perfection, and I think that true democracy just doesn't look perfect. So there's always the compromise and you know, like the little things. Maybe you don't agree with this. Maybe you think it would be better if it was like this. But in the end, it comes down to a consensus process. And I value that. And sometimes it's frustrating, but I also feel like I learn a lot from it.
Eileen?
Yeah, I'm not involved really at the level of making the choices. People come to me with ideas for manuscripts, and I generally kind of pass them on. But so I can't really talk to the process of making the decisions itself, only that, you know, the considerations are, you know, very much if the material fits with our sort of our goals, and that would include similar to what you were talking about, the anti-racism, ecological issues, a lot of Aboriginal, looking at Aboriginal life and the effect of colonization and so on and so forth. So I think it's primarily an issue of you know, what the stand is that the book takes, but it's, in our case, it's because we're an academic publisher, it's also a question of, are these books likely to be usable in courses in university and college.
I see. Right now, we're speaking here at the Anarchist Book Fair. You're listening to CKUT 90.3, and we've got sitting around the mics a few people who are in close contact with the ins and outs of the editing and the publishing of some of the books you could find here. Let me ask you one more open question is, what do you find is, what are some of the more popular themes right now being published, you know, in anarchist studies, in terms of the pamphlets and the books and the magazines out there? What are the things you've been seeing come across your desk lately?
I think popular is an interesting concept because what people like is what affirms them. And so there's always a lot of, what's popular is a lot of the, lots of sorts of appreciations of DIY culture, for instance, or for punk culture. People really like to be affirmed that way. What I think is important to put out there, and what I think ultimately becomes a challenge for independent media publishers, writers, and producers, is to always be challenging what isn't being challenged within the alternative movements as well as the mainstream movement, whatever that's supposed to mean. So that means constantly challenging patriarchy, constantly challenging white supremacy, constantly challenging class, and always bringing these issues up. And they're definitely not popular, but I think they're extremely valuable.
Louis, would you like to add to that?
Well, I have noticed that with current events, especially since September 11th and the Iraq War, that a resurgent interest in history. Both fairly recent, the Vietnam War, the Chilean coup in 73, the Kissinger years. We're actually seeing a lot of these same characters from those stories coming back and being in positions of power or advising the American government and general military actions going on. So I'm noticing that there's an interest in these things, and there's some submissions to the magazine that I put out, as well as a reception to the more historical aspects of Fishpiss magazine and other books that I publish. I find that there's an appetite to find out a little more what the background is to a lot of the stuff that's going on, which I think is very positive, because and it can never do wrong to find out a little bit more of the context and the precedents for in this day and age with all the stuff that's been going on for that, as well as a history of activists and how movements, anti-war movements or ecological movements fared in the past and what worked, what didn't work. I think that's the type. That's one of the things I've noticed that you could say is becoming a bit more popular, or at least more sought after by people interested in these kinds of things.
So we're joined by another panelist. We have Stephen here. We're just going to make sure that he can have a mic and a set of headphones. So bear with us as we get sorted out. We're speaking about to writers and publishers and distributors about the importance of finding spaces and forms within which to produce alternative news, media, and art. So, Stephen, can you introduce yourself and tell us who you're here with and a bit about the bookstore that you own and run?
Well, my name is Stephen Carl. We have the Abiyala bookstore, which has been on St. Lawrence, just north of Mount Royal, for the last 8 years. We're actually, our lease is coming up in July, so we're having a sale in June, and we're looking at what we're going to do exactly after that in terms of moving or whatever. But we set up the bookstore really to give voice to a lot of books that one doesn't, well, to give space to a lot of books that one doesn't normally come across or find easily. And it's with a focus on the Americas, so the idea, well, a lot on Latin America in particular, so a lot in Spanish, but also in English and in French, a lot of First Nations material, books by black writers from the Americas, all kinds of, North-South issues in general and political issues, and very much found that there's a lack of there is a very, very much a domination by the large, by more and more by large publishers and large bookstores, chain bookstores, and so on, and that independent bookstores have a very important role to play in bringing to the fore books that aren't found so easily elsewhere.
So maybe you can take us a little bit through the process that you go through when you're deciding what kind of content to put on your shelves. Do you read everything before it goes into your bookstore, or how do the decisions get made?
That would be wonderful. I'd love to be able to do that. Unfortunately, you have to deal with thousands and thousands of titles, but we do obviously have a lot of consultations with publishers, seeing what's coming out, a lot of contact as much as possible also with small publishers, and basically keeping up with what's coming out as much as possible in different ways.